This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 405, brought to you by iFanboy listeners exactly like you. Exactly. On the floors of Tokyo, down in London town to go-go, with the record selection and the mirror's reflection, I'm a-dancing with myself, when there's no one else inside, in the crowd. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 405. A great episode, a horrible road. I am Josh Flanagan, and here with me are Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Paul Montgomery.
Sup?
People used to complain that we talked about New York too much, so take that.
Well, they listened early when you used to talk about sitting in traffic. That would be like our little starting story. How was your traffic this week, Josh?
Well, it's because I had to go to the shop, and it was really far away, but I didn't want to break up with the shop guy to go to the shop that was closer than mine. It all worked out, though, because we're friends on Facebook now. We are from iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of them. One of us picks the one that they thought was the best of their stack. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about it on the podcast here. We talk about other books from the week and some other stuff that's going to happen. And we hope to have some fun, and we hope that that fun is then radiated out towards you.
No promise.
I make no guarantees.
No promise.
None. I like how you came in with that, reading my mind. Before we get going, we're going to talk about what happened in the books this week. So here's your spoiler warning. You know what that means. Deal with it. Connor, you had the pick of the week.
The pick of the week this week was Jupiter's Legacy number 3 from Image Comics, written by Mark Miller, drawn by Frank Quitely. And I've been enjoying this series quite a bit. I think we might have skipped talking about the second one. I don't remember. We talked about the first one and how it felt really different than Quitely's other recent work. Didn't feel as exploitative, didn't feel as shocking for shocking.
You mean Miller, like Mark not Quitely. Yeah.
Right, that's what I meant. Sorry. I've had no sleep and I'm on a problem, so my brain is not quite for this.
You're in a box. That's what people at home need to know. You're in a box right now.
I'm in the bubble boy bubble. Yeah. And it's a good week for me to monologue for 10 minutes because I can't think straight. So Mark, it's not quite as exploitative as Miller's recent work, not quite as shocking for shocking's sake. It seems to have a interesting story to tell about the nature of modern superheroes, and I've been loving it. Of course, I love Frank Quitely; he's one of my favorite artists, if not my favorite artist. And this is the issue where things took a dark turn, and not dark in a, you know, Mark Miller way, although it was graphic in the silence. It was dark in a story way, in that it's moving on at a brisk pace. The story is, you know, a Superman-esque character came along and sort of inspired the world. And this is him as an older man, and his son and his children and the younger, you know, the younger group of superheroes deal with life as celebrities and drug addicts. And it's like the classic children of actors or musicians scenario, mm-hmm. where they're all strung out and they're all followed by the paparazzi, and they don't really do anything because they didn't really earn anything. And their parents are the ones that did everything. And this is the issue where the conflict between the young and the old reached a head, which is a pun I didn't mean to make. I'm really loving the dynamic of it. And this was the issue where I was trying to think of an example from a movie or a show, but I couldn't because I'm out of it. But it's that point in the story where the things have turned against the good character, and the people who are bad are either feeling inadequate or jealous, or they don't like what the good person represents, and they decide to tear him down. And it's just, there's a sense of inevitability in this issue that's tragic because it's a tragic end to the main character.
So it's Luke Skywalker lost his hand.
No, it's even worse than that. It is
worse than that. It's pretty brutal.
It's that moment where the main character's brother, and I don't know any of these characters' names, but that's no knock in the book.
Uncle Walter.
Uncle Walter.
Ben Folds 5 did a song about him.
He's been jealous of the main character for this whole time.
Sheldon? That's another song you could use.
Sheldon. He doesn't get the accolades. He doesn't get the attention. So he's manipulating the son of the main character into turning on his father, and basically gets all the main superheroes the young ones to attack the main character and his wife, who was also a superhero. And it's just a brutal takedown of these two characters. And it's more, for me, I found it more sad than shocking, because, you know, these are two good characters. They do good in the world. They genuinely want to help everyone and make the world a better place.
You know what this is like? This is like that episode from this past season of Game of Thrones. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
If you know Game of Thrones.
It's like Red Wedding.
It has the same feeling. Like you feel that queasiness in your stomach. And it's interesting that you say that it's not super exploitative and shocking for shock's sake, which is true for Miller, maybe not for anyone else. Like on the Miller scale, it's pretty it's pretty mild. But for anyone else, you talk about the wife being killed. She, like, Uncle Walter goes into her mind and basically distracts her. And it's something, and it's a skill we saw that he used in the first issue against a villain. Here he uses it against his sister-in-law. And he's saying, basically, you think that you beat all these guys that I send to your compound and you have this false sense of security. But what if I showed you what is actually going on outside of your head, and you get this shot of her impaled by, it's like Marv in Sin City, you know, she's got like all these like knives and things. And I'm surprised there isn't any rebar sticking out of her, but she got messed up and he just says aneurysm and she's done. So I guess he just sparked an aneurysm, like a clot to go into her head or something. And it's a brutal book, and Quitely handles it quite handily. Morrison hasn't made him, you know, draw something crazy.
Quietly.
True. And what's great about it is now not really sure where the story's going. You know, like the board has been completely reset. The only real good character left, and good as a relative term, is the main character's daughter, who's on the run now from the killers, and her drug dealer boyfriend, who has some powers of his own.
He's sort of like if the Joker had a, or like Lex Luthor had a son or something. Like that's who he is, right? He's the supervillain son.
And so it's basically like, you know, what's going to happen? I'm not sure. Clearly, all the world superheroes are after her. How's she gonna survive? And what happens next with the, you know, Uncle Walter and the son? You know, it's going to be very interesting, and I'm just really enjoying this. It's not, you know, it's not quietly standards up to he's putting the book out relatively monthly. So it's not quite the level of deep, you know, detail. And I'm looking specifically at the last page, which looks like it was done really quickly. But I still appreciate the storytelling and the sparseness of it. And I'm really,
I don't notice that. I think the last page is drawn how it needs to. I was actually looking it all over the place, and like, look at the cover.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like everything on the like carved wooden desk is drawn.
Yeah.
Like that's really impressive. And the little bits of the dude's face. Oh, there's this great stuff all through this. There's a couple of things I really liked about this issue. And I think it was the strongest of all of them. Also, the printing on these are just great. These are really good looking. But I really liked before both of the parents went down, like they showed them in their own, like, you know, this guy's got his own Hollis Mason shop.
Yeah,
where he's hanging out, like trying, you know, he's got his ponytail and beard, a ponytail and a white beard. Like, I don't know how you can not like that guy.
He's Clark Kent in Kingdom Come, you know?
Yeah. And then there's the bit where he's talking to the, I don't want to say son-in-law, but you know what I mean? The sister's, the daughter's boyfriend guy.
Right.
And the thing happens, and there's a really nice sequence that he has to take off. He just shoots up through the roof. And, you know, you look and you see him. He's a spot in the sky. I thought that was really nice. Then you cut to, you know, like the mother is dressed like, you know, Aunt May. She's got the actual old school apron and, you know, housewife thing going on.
It's like a Donna Reed kind of look. Before,
yeah. You know, before all that horrible stuff happens to her. I just thought that this was a really great use of comic book storytelling in those ways. Like there were really big, obvious symbols that you're supposed to see one way before they rip that rug out from under you. Then the sequence where they're trying to escape by teleporting to all those different places. It's just incredible motion that's accomplished mostly with, you know, well, it's obviously stills, but you know, with word balloons and like showing the globe and the word balloons coming from the different places around it. Just a real sense of motion and speed, like everything just sped up and all of the stakes were raised immediately. It's a really well done comic book.
Really nice world building right from the first panel. If you look next to Samson's Autos, there's a building and it used to say "We Buy Gold," and now it's "To Let" close. So even the cash for gold places are going out of business, and that's how the economy has changed and how the world has changed. Because like right now, if you are in a certain part of your neighborhood and you're driving down the street, you're going to see signs for cash for gold places all over the place. Those things crop up like locusts. So this is a very different world, and I like that a lot right from the first panel.
It's a very sad issue. I think that's what got me. It was the most emotional that I had felt reading our book this week.
Yeah,
it was the most connected to the story I felt. It's just the whole, as I turned the pages, I just felt dread because I really do like these characters. I mean, they're obviously playing on the tropes of Superman, but, and that plays towards my affection for Superman, but I felt just a general sense of dread reading it. And it got to me as, you know, when the climax happens and the son kills the father, it was really sad. And it was a brutal last page with this, you know, the father's got a skull left for a face, but I didn't feel like it was exploitative in that scene. I think the mother's scene was much more brutal than the father's stuff.
It's graphic, you know, but it's not beyond the pale, I don't think, for today, and especially for Miller.
And and now I really want to know what happens next, and I get really excited whenever this book comes out, and I think that's pretty cool because I wasn't really feeling like that for Mark Miller books for a while, and I've always liked him as a writer for the most part. I don't always like his stories, but I do like him as a writer.
I don't, but I like this, so it's fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also, Frank Whiteley doesn't help.
Doesn't hurt.
He helps.
So do you guys remember way back in the 90s when Evie would touch her fingers together and she would stop time out of this world? Well, in Sex Criminals number one, Susie is her name?
Sounds right.
She uses the tip of her finger to touch a different part of her body to stop time. And that's how we get Sex Criminals, the new book from Matt Fraction and Image Comics. And all about a woman who can stop time when she has an orgasm.
And that's not a great pitch, like, for what it is. But, like, that is what happens. And, like, the criminals part is only sort of in the end.
The very last
page. This was, I thought, was spectacular. This one sort of took me by surprise. I didn't quite know what to expect. And going in, it's just sort of a really touching story about a girl's sexual awakening, and it's very touching and tender in that way. But then, like, as you progress, it's really kind of laugh out loud funny. Like when they go into the stalls and this girl is talking to one of the dirty girls in school that has a little bit more experience than everyone else, and she's saying, "Okay, I'm going to take you on as my, you know, my apprentice here, and I'm going to tell you everything that I know about sex." And then she's drawing like a very crude, in more ways than one, what's the Indian sex book?
Kama Sutra.
He's drawing and like these crazy things that Fraction came up with, like the Dutch microwave, which involves a brown paper bag, and just a lot of weird positions very creative, and it's, I don't know, it's it doesn't feel like anything else that's coming out on a monthly basis. It feels more like something that you would see in a graphic memoir. But I love this.
I liked it. I didn't love it. We should also mention Chip Zdarsky, or however you pronounce the last name. I apologize. His art was really strong. He's more of a, it was very cartoony, which is what you wouldn't expect from a book like this.
Right.
I found it more interesting than good.
Okay. And I think, I'll go with that.
And I think that we talked a lot about how Fraction can ride a line, and he rides it really well with Hawkeye. He rides it really well with Satellite Sam. Mm-hmm. But I felt like this was a little bit more of the straining to be funny or cool Fraction in this than I've read in those books.
Okay, well, you guys are old, but, so
well,
I'm hip and young.
No, you know
so.
What's interesting?
Go ahead.
What came to me as I was reading, and another book that we're going to talk about soon, is that we have, at Image Comics specifically, we've hit this point that's sort of like what I think Alan Moore was trying to get to when he did Lost Girls. He wanted to be able to do books that were adult without, well, he actually didn't mind if they were pornographic, but I mean, for the most part, like books that were sexual in nature, but not solely.
Right.
So you have like this story, you have sex, you had Black Kiss, you have, you know, like, I've never seen this many books like this. I don't know. I feel like this is some sort of symbol of our time that I can't decipher yet.
Right.
Like, there's a thing that's happening in comics I've never seen happen before.
It's definitely the kind of
at a mainstream level.
The graphic sexual nature in mainstream books has never, as far as I can remember, never been like this ever.
Yeah.
Books. I'm not talking about comics or the next.
And you know, this stuff's definitely existed. You know, Omaha the Cat Dance or whatever. You know, like that's a book that has this kind of stuff going on, and it's known. It's not nothing, but it wasn't put up by Image,
right?
And you know, going back to the Crumb or something like that. It's funny because now we have these examples of books that were from the literal comics underground, and they're starting to show up in the mainstream.
It's interesting. I don't have a problem with it. I'm totally fine with it.
I have no problem with it. I find it.
Does it make
really
you uncomfortable? Or?
I'm not sure what it says.
I just didn't. I didn't feel that the story was overly compelling.
Okay.
It was one of those things where you're like, "Oh, this is cute that she's like this and she's doing, and it's fine." But I don't. Yeah, like I don't care about it. So I don't know. It was interesting. I sound more negative than I want to, because I don't. I was. Very intrigued by it. It was interesting. I just don't know that it has given me the thing that's actually going to work as the hook for me yet. Because it's basically, I mean, it's a metaphor. It feels like a metaphor for sexual coming of age, which is not all that unusual other than the fact that it's pretty suppressed in society. So in that way, it's like a healthy kind of thing. Plus, she's going to become a bankrupt with us. So.
I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes now. Now that, you know.
They finally found a way to effectively use that horrible coloring method. When she's in
Photoshop,
they used it a lot in Powers. I remember.
Well, I think it's very character oriented in this first issue, and so maybe it'll take the second issue to really, because it's just a tease at the end that they're going to use this ability to stop time to commit crimes, and that'll probably form, you know, and that'll gel hopefully over the next couple of issues. So
if Burt Reynolds shows up, or his voice, supposedly, and then I'll be all right.
Okay.
Then I'll be all in. But.
Okay, but, I wanted to.
I'm giving it a solid 4 stars, but I just didn't love it. I thought it was more interesting than anything.
I'll go with that.
So I wanted to talk about outer space. So we don't talk about outer space nearly enough. In the midst of all the crazy stuff going on with Infinity, you have a couple of the regulars' ongoing books that play into that. Nova number 8 and Guardians of the Galaxy number 6. The big story with Guardians of the Galaxy is that it's goddamn gorgeous with the Sarabicelli pencils. And this issue in particular is, if you're bothered by Bendis doing a lot of talking head conversational stuff over in like Battle of the Atom, I don't entirely grant your premise, but this is a very action-oriented issue. So if you're looking for a return to the more swashbuckling kind of adventure comics, even though there's a lot of conversation going on, there's a great outer space battle with Gamora and this Angela character. You've got the Watcher in there. How do you guys feel about the Watcher? I've never really latched on.
I love the Watcher. Love him.
Love the Watcher. You don't use the Watcher too much.
Yeah. Right. That's what I think.
You want to make sure.
I think that's it.
You want to make sure that you don't do the thing where the big Watcher story is that he does interfere.
Yeah.
Right.
Because that's the thing that he always does. You need to find a way around that or be very, very, very spare with it.
Yeah. And
right. Sound good?
I think, yeah, it does. And I think what he's doing here is he has an internal monologue for the Watcher and how he's freaked out because there's this weird temporal anomaly in that Angela's in a, you know, publishing universe that she doesn't belong in or didn't belong in before. And in the end, when they ask him what's going on, he says, you know, I'm just to observe passively. And this is what this is. But he doesn't interfere. So it shows that there is a struggle in that big old noggin saying, I want to, you know, maybe help people out because this could end up, you know, catastrophic. But in the end, he goes by the usual, the typical, and says, I am the Watcher. This is this. I can't interfere. Sorry. Not even sorry.
I'm the Watcher on the walls. Wait, that's, no, sorry. Different
so
one.
That was a lot of fun. Book's looking great. And fun stuff with Groot and Rocket Raccoon. I still don't know why Iron Man's here. Kind of an interloper.
Sales.
Yeah. Nova number 8, continuing on with Zeb Wells. This is a fun book. This is, and I like that it addresses the fact that this is a kid being a superhero and he has all these role models to follow. It's, you know, like, this is what you do as a superhero. And yet when he runs up to his girlfriend while he's still in costume, she recognizes him instantly. And he's like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. I didn't disguise my voice. I'm an idiot. And I thought that was kind of cute that, like, play up to the fact that people can't just disguise their voice around people that they know and interact with every day in their civilian lives. This is a closer tie into Infinity in that it has Thanos and or Thanos.
Thanos.
caught myself there. And some of his lieutenant, and there's a teenage girl who bursts out of the belly of this weird alien animal, and she is set loose by Thanos to go after this kid Nova because he has a long history with the Novas in the Cancerverse, and he wants to know why there is still a little Nova corpseman running around, flying around on Earth. And so it's a fun and very lighthearted. It's lighter in comparison to what's going on in Infinity proper and the other Avengers books. It's not as dry. It's a little bit more more robust, more fun. And so I would recommend that.
Who's the artist on it now?
It's Paco Medina.
I enjoyed the first 6 issues. I might go back. I don't know. I really like the fact it was sort of self-contained. Anyway, I think the other book Josh was talking about earlier is Sex Number 7 from Image Comics, Joe Casey, Peter Kowalski, continues to do a really fun and interesting sort of crime drama book that also doesn't feel like anything else. Although these chin hairs got to go.
Chin hair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody's got these Billy Gruff things that just annoy the hell out of me.
That's really big in wherever Peter Kowalski's from. How about the two man masseuses with Prince Adam hair, though? That's something.
I think the mythology he's laying down is really interesting. I love the moment when the Killer Croc character tosses that guy into the ocean, into the river, and he pops his hand out like Jason at the end of Friday the 13th.
Killer Croc character.
Yeah, the main bad guy is basically he's basically Killer Croc.
At the alligator scene.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
He was Killer Croc before. These are all Batman allegories. And pops his hand out at the end. You know, he's not dead, so he's gonna survive.
Who was that guy? Do you know who that guy was?
They called him the operator.
Did we meet him before?
Yeah, we did. They beat him up in the last issue. And they tortured him for information.
I remember that part. I just remember who he was. Anyway, the reason that I wanted to bring this up is that I was reading it and I feel like this is a bold statement. I feel like with this book existing, there's kind of no reason for any other post superhero stories.
Whoa.
Like I feel like he's solved the, you know, like what's going on in your pick of the week in Jupiter's Legacy is like a what if it all went wrong story. And it's fun, it's entertaining, and we've seen it. But like, I feel like this is, like, after this, it's not really, we've said all of the things, since 1986, we've said all the things we need to say about the other side of superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it feels like, I'm like, I feel like we've solved it now. And I'm totally reading this and whatever, but like, I would be totally happy with the other kind of superhero stories, too, which I didn't used to like or whatever, but
you're swinging back to the traditional now. You're done with,
I'm just saying, like, they've just explored so much ground, and Joe Casey in particular has done it so well in so many different ways. You know, the progression from through his stuff to get to this. Like, he just can't stop thinking about the other sides of the superheroes.
What is it about?
And he does it in such a way that.
What is it about this one in particular that says this is the last one?
I mean, the thing is, you know, the first sort of steps in it is to look at these characters and go, wait a minute, they're a little bit pathological. They're a little bit, you know, antisocial, and they have problems. And then, you know, the extension of it is like, they are all fucked up sex perverts. And like, it's true. Like, that's the logical extension of all this. And there's not really a lot else to say about it.
Right.
And I'm blown away. Like, it's really well written. And I feel like the way that our society is, the way that we view material like this, it will get looked over because it's also putting the sex aspect of it. And I like that it's completely agnostic sex. It's, you know, whoever's fucking or whatever they're doing, how, like, it's just there, which is real life, by the way. It's always there. We just don't talk about it. It's always in the background of everything. There's my philosophy on life. But I just feel
like... Are there people having sex behind you right now, Josh? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
If the dog could reach, it would, but he's got a weird neck. But like it's kind of like, to me, it's like, this is kind of the final word on what a Batman thing is really going to be about. And it just, at the end of the day, it's just done really well. I'm going through it, I'm going, you know what, for I don't know how many years now, 15 years, you know, Joe Casey books are written really well, and they're always thought-provoking and interesting. And I just continue to be totally impressed by this. But I do think, like, all right, you guys, you've solved Batman.
Yeah, I mean, you can say that about any kind of comic book.
Sure.
I think it's just a mess. I mean, and that, by that logic, all the stories are done, because they've done that. Yeah. They've solved the traditional stories. They've solved the post, you know, the breakdown of the teardown of the trope stories. I mean, they're all been done.
Yeah, no, I know, but I'm saying, go ahead and have his current adventures and whatever, and do the thing. But at the end of the day, this is the statement that's going to stand. It isn't, because it'll, you know, the churn. But I'm very impressed by it, and I really like the way I like the way it makes me think. I like that it's bigger than just the thing. It's funny, I'm saying that, I'm looking at the cover. And the cover is gears inside the dude's head.
Right.
I didn't even thought of that. Anyway,
next issue is going to be messed up from the looks of things.
Well, the next issue, I'm like, oh, it's just Preacher.
The next issue is the big orgy.
Yeah.
The big orgy. So if you want to help the show out, go to ifanboy.com/comics. And if you are interested in Joe Casey's sex book, in November, there's going to be the first collection collecting issues 1 through 8, which this issue is issue 7. So up to you, get the orgy in it. So that's something to look forward to. And if you want to buy that in November, go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link, purchase it there. We get a little piece of that sale. Nothing comes out of your pocket, comes out of Amazon's gigantic pockets. And everyone is happy. We're happy. The lights stay on. You're happy. You got the sex book. Amazon's happy. They made a sale. Everyone's happy, even Joe Casey.
8 issues is nice. That's a nice
trade. Yeah, it's a
trade.
nice healthy trade.
You don't see that a lot.
So make that your bookmark. Go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. Copy and paste the link to Amazon. Make that your Amazon bookmark. Never think about it again. And that's how you can best help the show.
Eight issues is engorged.
It's an engorged. It's a throbbing book.
Yes.
It's not a flaccid 4-issue.
No, not at all.
A floppy 3-issue vignette.
It's not the kind of book that'll just dangle there. You know, it'll stand proud.
No, it's a 2-messin' volume.
Yeah, exactly. Stand proud on the shelf.
Yeah.
With sex volume 1. So go to iPhone.
Preferably next to 2 smaller books.
And we thank you very much. Now, another S book from Image. Look at the S cargo. Is Saga 14. And I was telling somebody this week that I'm really enjoying Saga, but I'm reaching the point of I should jump to trades, because, you know, it's a very long story, and it's not written in the traditional something exciting happens in every issue way. And you know.
It's really interesting how you've become like this, because I was thinking about this, and I really like reading stories like, as long as it doesn't take so long that I forget what's happening.
Right.
I don't mind spending a little time every month going into those worlds. In fact, I am more likely to read it like this because I will – it's not even a money thing. Like, I will not get the trades. And if I do get them, I won't read them because I'll be like, I don't have time to read that whole thing. I like these bite-sized chunks. I like stepping into these worlds.
We've also built it up in a way and put it up kind of on a pedestal, but it does deliver every time. There's some, you know, some issues are better than others, but it I think it always feels special, and it always feels kind of novel.
Master the single issue.
Yeah. And there are cliffhangers at the end of every one, and I really enjoyed this issue
in
particular.
One is just a refueling.
I like that we get a return to the tiny little seal person with the walrus mount, even though it's just like a background thing, or it's just like an establishing shot. Like, the characters play no part in this issue, but I like seeing them again. They're interesting characters, and that something terrible is going to happen to that little seal person, or it's going to turn into a crazy monster with a Sarlacc pit mouth. I don't know which. Or it's going to be some kind of crazy sexual deviant. I don't know. What I like here, finding a little bit more about the family stuff. We've got Even, Alana's stepmom. And I like that the
great drawing.
I like that those fairy folk have different kinds of wings. That's just a neat detail. They don't have the same kind of fairy wing. Like, she has like a monarch butterfly kind of wing, and you know, Dad has his own kind of wings. And it's just it would be easy for the artist to just draw them all alike, and they have the same anatomy. But so it's a, you know, nice bit of world building there. What else happens in this issue? It was good. We get maybe something going on. Maybe something going on with mom, without her ear, and an eye guy.
It's a big eye.
Just saying, a lot of good stuff.
He puked on the baby.
Listen, that baby's puked. That baby's puked other people, so that baby deserves it.
Yeah,
true.
I wanted to mention Batman Superman 3.1 Doomsday Number 1 really quickly, because it felt like there was a bit of a rebuke to Man of Steel in this issue. This was written by series writer Greg Pak, and it was a Tale of Doomsday on Krypton, which I wasn't really so much into quite at all. But in the issue, Doomsday is wreaking havoc. Colonel Zod shows up. This is before he's a general, to save the day, and saves the life of the narrator. But in the process, it says, but because of him, thousands more died as the city crumbled. And felt a little spot on.
Hmm.
So I thought that was interesting. Not so much the story, it's just that little bit of dialogue.
Does it give really you, does sort it, of, and he's going to be doing Action Comics?
Yes.
So does that, I mean, seeing it's more of a traditional Superman comic than Superman Batman.
It's hard to say. I just didn't really care about this particular story. I didn't really care about Doomsday wreaking havoc on old Krypton. Right. Brett Booth drew it, and I'm not a fan of his, so that sort of turns me off also. And, you know, I just didn't. It was written fine. I just didn't really care. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
It was the storyline. The subject matter. I didn't really care about.
But it's an interesting commentary, though.
I just thought it was funny that there was sort of a very spot on Doomsday and Zod fighting in the city, and it's getting destroyed, and they made a point of mentioning thousands died in the rubble, and I thought that was interesting. That's all. Young Avengers 10.
I think Kieran Gillen is very smart.
He is.
Smart cookie.
I mean, like, I was reading this, And I just couldn't help sort of get past the point. I was like, this is remarkably well thought out. And I was very impressed. I was a little intimidated. But there was just one of those issues where not a lot happened, but there were just machinations and things moving around and stuff that's clearly been around since the beginning, and reveals and big deals, you know, 10 issues in. And I'm not leaving out the art or anything. We've all said many times we like it, but it's really well written and planned. And I was just super impressed by it, and I continue to be, but like almost more so. Like, not, it wasn't, this was not an action issue or anything. It's not really an action story, but I think the thing, Loki, like, it's really got such a handle on that character, and the thing is, we keep fooling ourselves into thinking, well, maybe we should trust him and like him, because this isn't the same one, and that's just dumb, and it's obviously dumb, but we all do it.
That's why he wins.
I know, it's great.
I find myself brilliant. Less interested in or less connected to the mother character and that story. And I realize that sounds crazy because it's basically the whole story, but I'm not really sure I've got a handle on what the whole scheme is and what she is. And I don't really, I just like the characters and hanging out with them and that's fun. But when it gets back to the mother showing up and the blobby people, I just don't, I sort of check out a little bit, but
yeah, I think the characters are the draw really. And those relationships, and I like that he's sort of like expanding the cast a little bit.
So Wonder Woman 23.2, Firstborn number one. This was also written by series writer Brian Azzarello. Like, you know, and once again, you never know if you're supposed to read the issue or not if you're following the book. But this is an introduction
to... If it's the series writer, I go for it.
Yeah, but the thing is, like we mentioned, how do you know? You don't know.
Like, you have to look. I took the chance.
Did you read this?
Yeah, I did.
This seems to be, you know, setting up the next major villain in the story, the firstborn son of Zeus and Hippolyta.
Hippolyta.
Well, you could say Hippolyta, you could say Hippolyta.
Ron left and I've taken over the role of not being able to pronounce anything. I don't know how that happens.
Someone asked me on Twitter today, what's the deal with Rusty Auto Parts? He's like, what is the deal with that? And so I sent him a link, but yeah.
Anyway, I liked it. I thought it was an interesting setup. I mean, it's not super crucial. You don't need to read it, but... You know,
it's background on the firstborn character that Wonder Woman basically defeated in the last time. That was the pick of the week.
Yeah.
The real story here, I think, is ACO on pencil because I opened this up and I thought it was Cliff Chang and it wasn't. You don't always have to ape the main artist style, but if you're gonna, this guy can come back, or this acronym, this computer program, whatever ACO is, can come back anytime. This is great. I thought this was a beautiful
it's
book.
A Cliff Optimizer.
Hello, I am ACO. I will draw like Cliff Chang.
Looks like Alfie.
You know what's funny is if there wasn't really a whole lot of Wonder Woman, but there was a whole lot of he's rewriting Greek mythology, which is a pretty big thing. It's maybe even harder than rewriting Superman.
I liked it. I quite enjoyed it. I liked him being raised in the wild and showing up in his army of crazy feral animals. And
it's Apollo, right? Is he's learning the story of the firstborn. And I like the oracles. Like I like how he's sort of updated, you know, like the crazy stuff that he did with Hermes, you know, having the chicken legs. And I sort of like the update on Apollo and the oracles is sort of like B girls or something. Just explaining what's going on. And I like the voice of that. So great book. Yeah.
Yep.
I wanted to bring up East of West really quick. East of West number six. It's a Hickman book, so I'm not entirely sure what's going on. There's a big, big world swirling around. Everybody's being really vague. But they brought in the Texas Rangers, which I really enjoyed. Not the baseball team, the actual Texas Rangers.
I figured that was why.
And there's this really fun courtroom scene and the idea of justice. And there are people who are fighting against whatever the world has turned into. And the more Western this book gets, the more I like it. The more Eastern, the more I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So there you go. And I'm culturally biased. There it is. I wanted to finally bring up The Wake number four, Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy. I just, this is like an exercise in raising the stakes, which was certainly done. And, you know, this felt like, I was going to say Deep Blue Sea, but I feel like that's not doing, it's doing it a disservice.
Feels like aliens.
To a certain extent. But it did have that where like, yeah, that same thing. Like, they just kept getting deeper, and it kept getting worse, and it kept getting worse, and at the end, it was worse than that. And that was good. It was very suspenseful for a comic book. We don't see a lot of that constant, you know, moving and very...
Although, I just feel at the beginning, like, it was kind of crazy that they survived. You know, I didn't totally buy the fact that they would have survived that, but I let that go. I just really love Meeks.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Meeks is a great character.
You gotta get shit done.
And that thing at the end is huge. Like, that scale is a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
And caught me entirely off guard. But, yeah.
It's interesting. I like the science or the pseudoscience behind all this. I think it's fun. It's a really suspenseful horror book, which is good. And it's beautiful.
The coloring is great.
I like how the Native Americans are destroyed by what I think is Gungan technology. I'm not entirely sure. There it is.
It's true. Dump. Oh, stupid.
This is science. This is not a big bumper.
I can't even acknowledge it.
That's great. All right, so those are the books that we're Those are the books that we're excited about this week. But we want to talk about some news that hit. So I just started this week doing some writing over at MTV Splash Page. So I invite you all to Viacom on over and see what happens when the comics meet the movies and the TV. So some of the big stories this week: Gotham heading to Fox Television, young James Gordon cop show. Developed by Bruno Heller of The Mentalist. And you're going to be hearing a lot about Mentalist alums in this block of the show.
Well, I thought it was fun because you did that. There was a word that maybe Gotham Central was going to be made into a show. So
yeah, it's been like long rumored. And
you painstakingly did that casting call, the article for MTV Geek and
Splash Page.
Splash Page. And then the news came out. There wasn't actually...
It was like hours later. Like it went up. I'd agonized it over for 2 days, like just putting every, like finding my Maggie Sawyer, finding, you know, my Jim Gordon, and now they're gonna do a young Jim Gordon, and it's no Batman. It's before Batman. Yeah.
It's a cop show in Gotham with a young Jim Gordon.
So any rogues at all?
They said you're gonna see the beginnings of villains. You know, you're gonna see the sort of early stages of it. Who knows what that means? But apparently there was a fierce bidding war. It did end up on Fox. Everyone's surprised it ended up on the CW.
Right.
You know, these shows don't automatically go to the CW. They do have to get purchased by the networks. And, you know, like Wonder Woman didn't go to the CW either, or they went to NBC as well. NBC. So anyway, Fox ended up buying it after what was told was one of the more fierce bidding wars in recent times. So apparently people really like the script. Bruno Heller's a good writer. I really enjoy The Mentalist. It's a good mystery show. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen. I think it's exciting. I mean, it was certainly surprising news, but
there's parts of it that it's like, why don't you just use Gotham Central? I know there was a thing where Chris Nolan had a moratorium. You cannot use, like, please don't use Batman, you know, on like Smallville or...
It wasn't please. It was, you can't. There was no asking. It was telling.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, you know, do not do that. And cause we want to stay on message with, you know, what Batman is. And, we don't want that in, you know, that involvement. And, but I don't, so I don't know if that still stands with, you know, Zack Snyder and Batman versus Superman.
Clearly not. If they're doing this, and I do wonder if it's going to take place in that world, although the new Batman movie is not in that world. So maybe they have freedom now to sort of step outside of the Nolan universe. But, I think the reason they did this instead of Gotham Central is just a higher degree of pre-awareness is what they all want now in their projects.
And our friend Jeff Reed mentioned to me that there is sort of a precedent for this, not in Gotham Central, but there was apparently a series out there about young Jim Gordon in Chicago before he moved out to Gotham in Batman Year One. I don't know the writers or artists involved, but I'm going to borrow those issues off him and check it out. There's part of it that's like, why bother doing, you know, like what would make this show special beyond all the bazillion other procedurals? And is it just Jim Gordon in name?
He's a popular character. Yeah.
It's interesting. They think that character's name has enough weight.
Yeah. So
I suppose pop culturally, I don't care that Batman, like I hear Batman's not in it and I go, that's probably better. I'm totally fine with that because Batman was never the draw of, I mean, it's going to be like Smallville. Like the specter of it will be in the background if I understand it correctly. But you know, the idea was.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. I mean,
the early promise. Well, I mean, cause it was good. They told a lot of really interesting, good cop stories in a place that was really hard to be a cop. And if people are going to, if the criminal element starts getting crazier and crazier, as long as it's well done, and that's really the question, then there could certainly be something there. I think I tend to think of when people described Smallville for a long time, it was a show where like you're not going to see him fly, you're not going to see him in costume. That's a promise. So, but it was still there, even though they didn't do it about it.
That's mostly because the main character was going that way. This is more like the world is crumbling around this guy. You know, Batman may
just be like,
he's not going to be Batman.
Like, if it's badly written, like just be lots of God. I just wish somebody would do something. About
need some
it.
Help here.
I mean, it would be great if there was just a person just who just had a mission, you know?
Maybe if they have like real bats like flying into the windows, but they don't break through. Like they just keep like crashing,
just keep bouncing off,
like bouncing off the glass.
That one's gotten a series commitment, which doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be on the air, but it does mean that they are committing to producing.
Right, and I am curious to see, even though it's not a direct adaptation of Gotham Central, if they do pull anything else from Gotham Central.
Right,
because it is such it's like this close, but not exactly. I don't know. So they could, but so another TV show that they just announced this week, Constantine, or it will probably be known as Constantine, on NBC.
That's not a serious commitment, though. They're just developing a project, right?
They're working on a script.
So that's important to understand.
Yes.
Yeah, that's important to understand if you're listening. That means that, you know, the most that will ever be produced of this could just be a script.
Right.
However, David Goyer involved, and Daniel Cerrone, I guess, is also from The Mentalist.
He is the other guy Mentalist. Is the showrunner of The Mentalist. This guy is an executive producer on The Mentalist.
Well, Goyer, you know, whether or not you like Superman or not, this Goyer has made billions of dollars for Warner Brothers.
Goyer's got his hooks into these properties, and he's sort of become known as the DC guy, yeah. Right? So he does. I think like everything goes. Feels like everything goes through him first.
Yeah,
and you know, that depends on how much you like his work. Depends on how happy you are about that. But
okay, so, but when I send an email to Josh, what did you type? Can you vocalize the word that you said in response?
I believe it was resurrected.
So Muttley.
Yeah.
How you feeling?
I don't know. I don't think it'll happen. Very realistically, they can't even sell comic books to this thing. It's a very well-known.
But this is sort of like, you know, supernatural detective show, which is there's certainly NBC. First of all, there's those shows that are on the air right now, and they're somewhat popular.
My first thought, my literal first thought, and the thing that I don't really have an answer for is whether he's going to be British or not. And if he is British, he's definitely going to be in America.
Yeah,
right.
It's going to be like Elementary.
Wouldn't you love to see the BBC make this show? It would be bigger if they made this show in England, there might be a case for making it British.
Elementary's very popular. They could go that way.
It depends how far they're willing to go. I don't know how much of it translates to it's on NBC. There's a lot of chances for that to go wrong, and you're gonna get just another dumb show. I mean, that's what I think. I think it's very unlikely there would be something watchable if it even makes it to that point.
So the
possibility exists that we'll have it along with Gotham and with The Flash at the CW, which is actually happening. So there's a chance that next season you've got three DC shows going at the same time, which would be interesting to Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Maybe
four, right?
Comic book shows going.
It would be Arrow, and also, like, Flash.
Oh, and Arrow. So that'd be four DC shows on the air.
Yeah.
None of the people behind anything at any of those companies right now makes me think that they're going to create a Constantine show that will appeal to the kind of Constantine fan that I was. Nothing.
Well, you're probably not the target audience.
What if it was like HBO or Showtime?
I accept that.
You don't even have cable, that you're definitely not the target audience. They don't care about you.
No, I know. I know. I mean, I've long ago accepted that. But like, there's going to be it's going to be a TV show. You've seen a million other TV shows like this. They all have stuff in common. It's going to be like that. So it's not going to be for me. I'm not mad about it. People were like, I want to see Josh's rant. This is why this stuff exists, to make TV shows out of it and hopefully cash in on a larger scale.
Yep.
They very rarely succeed at it.
We very rarely see them. Over the years, we've had tons of shows optioned and developed, and right. Even pilots written, even pilots filmed, and we don't necessarily see them. So,
but even the ones that make it to air, that make it to series, very rarely succeed. You know, the successes we've seen in this are Smallville was a very strange success, but a long sort of slow burn success, and then the other ones are giant movies.
Well, Arrow's been successful so far.
Yeah, but in the same way that Smallville is.
Yeah.
Successful in the way that a show, a low-budget action series is in today's TV market, which is a very different thing than it was 5-10 years ago.
Yeah, which is why I think they're going to the cop route. I mean, these are both sort of cop shows. You know, Constantine's not a cop, he's a detective. At least he's an investigator. He's a whatever, a private eye type of character.
You know what? Maybe it takes. Maybe it does like a Galactica. Maybe it's great.
We'll find out.
No.
Let's do some audience questions. The first is an email from Pari London, my son. I don't know what that means, from the UK. And he says, I recently gave up my pull list. I gave my pull list a major cull. I was skim reading books just to get through them and keep up with the stories. My wallet was also groaning. Some people, books were removed to trade. Others were left behind as a single shed tear in each of their memories. Moving down from an average of 10 to around 5 weekly reads has saved me money, but it hasn't saved me time. I now find I'm spending around the same amount of time on my books, but enjoying them so much more. Taking in the pacing, the panel layout, the pencils, the inks, the lettering, the narrative, appreciating the books as a whole package. So my question is, now that the website side of iFanboy has signed off, are you able to just read the books you want rather than many you're obligated to for professional reasons? And if so, are you enjoying them more with a lighter load? No. Not that I'm enjoying the list, but you know, the thing that we had to read the books for was the show.
I have less time to read the book. I'm like cramming them out. It's worse than ever.
But it's just, I mean, I didn't have to read the books to do the light week column. It was to talk about them on the show and do the pick of the week. So the thing that the major driving force behind reading the book is still here for me anyway.
Yeah. It feels like there would be more space and more time to read the stuff. And that's, I guess, technically the case, but the way it actually works out is we don't have the incentive that we have to cram and read all the books on Wednesday or you know, the main contenders on Wednesday and then write a review. So I think we're ending up reading a lot of stuff on Friday.
Yeah, no, I have more time, but what I find is I'd use that time for other things. So my comic time is less and my other time is
I'm reading good. More trades. I'm reading,
yes,
Razzle. I'm reading, I got the big color complete edition and I've been reading Razzle. I read Revival, which we talked about last week.
I have a job and a little kid, so there's no vacuum that is not filled. But I don't know, comic reading for me is mostly the same, but I always like to, those are the parts that I like to read. That I like about comics is to sort of look at the mechanics and stuff. That's why I'm in it. That's why I'm into it. I mean, so no one wants to hear about us not having enough time or anything like that, but that's how I try to read my comics.
I think the main point is that it hasn't changed for us. It's not like the thing we had to do to read the books is gone. It's still here. It's the show. So ultimately, it's the same amount of reading. Let's take a voicemail now from a guy with a character about pets or not.
Hey, fanboys, this is Drogan from New Jersey. I have a question for you. What are your favorite pet characters? Not necessarily your favorite characters, but the people that you like to see show up in the background of scenes or just every so often in the appearance in Spider-Man. My favorite are Cloak and Dagger. I like to see them. I don't necessarily always love their individual series, but when they pop up, I'm a happy fan. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
So who do we like to see pop up in a book? Who are we excited to see in a story? We mentioned The Watcher earlier. I always liked seeing The Watcher show up. I was always a big Phantom Stranger fan whenever he was in basically DC's version of The Watcher. When he showed up, it meant something bad was going to happen. Not anymore. Now he's got his own book. But let's see. We used to say about The Punisher, you know, many years ago. That he was always
fun.
This
is like
a
force of nature, yeah, that just pops
up.
For me, it's a lot of the Justice Society characters, and like I'm thinking like, you know, not the current versions of them, even though I you know, enjoy Earth 2 from time to time, but I would always love when, you know, Dr. Midnight would show up with the owl, and I love a lot of those sort of like golden age kind of characters, and you know, Wildcat, and
I like when Dr. Midnight would show up to help like to fix somebody. You know, it'll be an injury, and suddenly Dr. Midnight there strapping on his glove, you know, his medical gear or whatever, but over the costume. That's probably sanitary. Mm-hmm. And
I like Jimmy Olsen.
Mm-hmm.
I like when Jimmy Olsen shows up because he's can be throwbacky, and you can watch people try to figure out how or if to modernize them at all. It's always sort of something that's sort of telling about the kind of story that the writer is trying to go for. I really like I don't like Doctor Strange all that much, but I like when Wong shows up. He usually comes along with him. Big fan of Wong. I like Iceman a lot.
Wait, why Wong?
I like Wong.
Is it because of his name is funny?
No, it's not that. I think it's that he's one of those characters that he's like, he's basically like, he's ignored by everybody. He's perceived to be like a low level kind of lackey, but he knows his shit. He knows what's going on.
He knows what's up.
And you think about like, he's like Kiff. Like, can you just imagine having to deal with Stephen Strange?
Right.
Like, he's a guy who sees and knows everything. He has all his stuff, and he's got a massive ego.
Right.
I like the hubris of a guy who, you know, like, he's chosen to live that life for some reason. I think that's interesting.
You mentioned Jimmy Olsen. I love Steve Lombard. I love whenever Steve Lombard pops up because he's such a dick. He's like the Joe Bluth of the DC universe. He's wonderful.
It's funny because like the whole cast of Ultimate Spider-Man is like one of those characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like for a while when Iceman and I guess it was Firestar, right? Yeah, they lived with
Human Peter. Torch.
Human Torch, right? Oh, like that stuff. Like I like those characters a lot. I like them hanging out. But I like ensembles just in general. Right. I like those characters that come and make the ensemble more interesting. I don't know if that's the answer.
Those are pretty good. Those are pretty good.
Yeah.
Squeeze one more email in, Paul. Can you take it for us?
Micah from Texas. I have recently transferred into a 4-year university this fall, and I'm finding it harder to make time for comics. I understand that readings for class is more important than comics, and the comics will still be there, and that I don't have to read them right away. I find myself now rewarding myself with a comic when I complete homework, or do swell on a quiz or test. My question to you guys is, when you three were in college, how did you guys balance out your time for comics?
This is like the companion piece of the first email.
Mm-hmm. Well, there wasn't as much internet porn then.
There was none. Well, the thing is, remember, is Josh and I had a really useless major that didn't require a lot of work. I had a lot of free time.
Yeah, I mean, I did, like, relatively. I did a lot. You know what? You're right. I was never at the point where I was like, I don't have time to read these comics.
Right.
I mean, Connor and I would play Madden a lot.
Or GoldenEye. Yeah, I mean, just it's like anything else. You budget your time, and in college, I don't know, but I had a lot of free time.
I mean, I don't. Maybe he's like a pre-med or something. He's got stuff going. I definitely had stuff to read. I read lots of books in college. I did lots of stuff, but I mean, you were in class like 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Here's what you don't understand. I'm figuring what's happening here, Micah, and I'm sorry to do this to you, but you are in college, so that means you're coming from high school where you had nothing but free time. Like, you thought you were busy, you thought you had stuff, but once you, I mean, like, it just keeps getting worse.
I actually had the opposite problem. I went to a high school that was very rigorous,
mm-hmm.
And it was one of the things they told us was that you will find yourself busier here than you will in college. So when college came around, I was like, this is fucking awesome. I don't have 4 hours of homework a night,
Well, what I'm saying is, like, as you progress through life stages, you will find that your time will become more and more precious.
Right.
Yeah. If you're already freshman year, you have no time in college.
Screwed.
Whatever job you're working for is going to really eat up your time, and then you're going to, you know, you'll get married, or you'll have a kid, or you'll have a dog, or you'll have whatever. You'll have to take care of your house and rake the yard and all that. Like, you will pine for the time that you.
I think about college and like just we used to jump in a car and go somewhere and. How did we do that? How did we have time for that?
Yeah, no, it was let's take a road trip. Okay. You just do it. Or like, this is the greatest, like, today in my life, I can't just decide I'm going to stay up all night.
Right.
Because that's going to screw me up for 3 or 4 days. But like then, totally good. I remember I used to schedule my classes so that I never had any before noon.
Yeah, I had like noon to 3, and then after 3 o'clock, I didn't have any classes, and so
I had a job. I worked at the mall at the same time. Like, it was just time.
Where does it all go?
I found that I had more of a routine in college. Like, I commuted to college, and I would go on the train. I could read on the train a lot. And like, you know, before I left campus, I would go a little bit off campus to get my comics. And I didn't get into comics until like later on in college. So. And I was doing like senior project and stuff. So it was even less sort of structured. So I could, you know, wander around town and, you know, grab my comics and then go somewhere and eat lunch and read my books and stuff or read them on the train going home or whatever. And I found that just like I knew when I should be reading comics. Like I knew when I had those opportunities to read them. Whereas now I just sort of, since I work from home, it just sort of like, I'd forget to read my comics, or like I
wouldn't get around to them.
There's always something else that I'm doing, or so, I liked having like Wednesday, I would read my comics or whatever.
I also think I'm reading probably twice as many comics now as I was in college.
Yeah,
probably. I think.
And digital makes everything different, you know, like that. It's a different experience than having my brown.
You're not looking at a stack.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm thinking about it now, and like the amount of stuff I did in college would have made me tired just thinking about it now.
Which is old. All that we're doing is telling them. And I'm not. Paul's not even part of this, but like he's getting there. Yeah. No, I totally know. I don't even understand how we fit it.
How did I do all that stuff? I spent a lot of time chasing
girls.
To be fair,
I should have worked harder.
That's true for all.
Yeah,
that
what
is
we sowed.
Frighteningly abundant to look at my current status.
you guys were communications, right?
And you're TV and radio.
TV
major,
and radio, right? And I was screenwriting.
Be a TV radio major.
And you were a screenwriting major.
And I was a screenwriting major. And
that's a thing. It's real.
Well.
Yeah, but that's a long shot.
Yeah. But
I should be an engineer, for God's sake.
But my thing was just real quick was that, you know, my screenwriting professors were also big into comics. Like I helped my professor move his box of comics out of his basement and into a storage unit. That was a gig I had one day. So I was always talking about my professors with comics. That was like part of my academic relationships, and just thinking
also,
about story, so it was part of it.
Also, I mean, let's we are outliers. I mean, to be fair, we didn't have any problem making time for comics. We still do. Well, look at what we, you know, Connor and I gave up almost every physical comfort in life to work on this for five years,
yeah.
And then all the time before that we did it. Like, you know, that's. There's clearly something to the medium for that. And, you know, Paul, you are sadly on the same road, and I want to turn you around. You just shut down the website so you wouldn't throw away your life like ours. we have to pull the plug, Paul. But why? You gotta trust us.
You know, I was thinking, you know, remember when in college when, like, doing nothing all day meant literally doing nothing, whereas, like, last weekend was the weekend where I did nothing. I'm making air quotes you can't see because I like totally rearranged the apartment, vacuumed, took stuff, you know, got rid of stuff. You know, I was like working all weekend. Whereas in college, do nothing meant sitting on the couch on the terrace in Holmes Hall with a bunch of people drinking for 3 days. Man, I miss that.
Even if we try to sound like we're busy or we have obligations, we're a bunch of Judd Apatow characters. So, and we're probably driving people nuts who have actual degrees or are, you know, training to be.
No, I'm going to get 401ks. Who are those people?
I do have a kid. I mean, you know, that I'm not saying it's anybody else's problem.
No.
But you have no idea.
Everyone's life is different. I'm just saying life is different now. And in college, seems to be a lot of time.
Josh is
time
like the Paul Rudd Apatow character. Because he has, you know, obligations.
How did he have a BMW, though? It just doesn't make sense. They just weren't allocating their money properly, I think. Part of the problem. This is 40.
If you want to hear us bitch about being old more, you can send us an email at contact@fanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOY-326-2697. We will certainly do it. If you, as you can tell, it's a dam waiting to be burst. If you want to,
I feel like half the audience is like, this is totally why I listen to the show. And half the audience is like, what the? Shut up.
Yes. And you both will be right. Let's talk about some shows. This past week, Paul and I talked about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We did a special edition podcast. You may have heard it. You may not have heard it. It's on the feed right behind this show. We talked for about 30 minutes about the pilot episode, our thoughts on that. And we're not going to do that every week.
No,
but
just pilot.
If it's a special issue, if they're like, you know, if Robert Downey Jr. shows up in an episode, maybe we'll do a podcast
sure.
about it. But
play by ear.
But it was fun. It was interesting. It was a fun show, and it was a fun podcast with Paul and I. That was our, like, record and turn it around and throw it out show.
Yeah.
So, it was fun.
Another show that we have coming up for you, probably later this week. We have Booksplode with, it's a Booksplode about Batman Year 100. We got a special guest on there, current Batman writer Scott Snyder. And so we talk about Batman Year 100 and how it sort of influences what he's doing on Batman. And then it's a bit of a talk explode too. We talk about what's going on in Zero Year and we talk about all things Batman. I mean, there's a little bit of Batman Beyond in there and Dark Knight Returns, of course, you know, that pops up. So that'll be coming out later this week. And then also I see on the script, it's Fuzzy Typewriter. Yes, I'm still talking about Breaking Bad. There's one more episode left. The podcast is just it's turned into an entire Breaking Bad podcast for this final season. But then I think we're going to be talking about Hannibal soon. So because I just got the Blu-ray of the first season of Hannibal. That's another one that was like, that's not going to work. Totally does. Really great show.
That's the kind of show really? That makes me think that Constantine could work at NBC because it's a cool, if it's done in that style.
Yes.
Totally work.
I'm watching it, and I'm right. Continually shocked that it looks this good and that it is this good. Now, it's worth noting that if you get the home video release, there's producer's cuts. So I don't know if I'm seeing a lot of stuff that wasn't on network TV. But
the network stuff was pretty gruesome.
Yeah, it's
also they don't have to CGI magic and demons.
Yeah. Well,
so head over to iFanboy.com to find those shows, comment on those shows, comment on this show. I'll find all of our podcasts there. And follow along at twitter.com/iFanboy and facebook.com/iFanboy for our updates. And no, those are not going away, despite some comments from some people this week confused as to why we continue to update them. We still have content to put out, so we still update our things. Social networks.
Ha ha! Take that, doubters! I'm like, well, the iFanboy story. Write that correctly. You can email us at contact@iFanboy.com, or you can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS. Which is 326-2697 with your questions for the show or your comments or, you know, maybe if you have something really interesting to say, well.
What I'm saying is we will start answering emails about college. I'm just saying it'll happen. If you start emailing them in, we'll do it.
Tell us what comics you're into. If you're digging on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we can, you know, if you have any interesting things to say about that, that's another thing we can talk about. Instead of doing a podcast on it every week, we just bring up what your thoughts are. And if you dig us, write us a review over on iTunes, or better yet, you can tell your friends about us, introduce your mom to podcasts, spread all that iFanboy stuff. What Apatow character do you think Connor is?
Jason Segel.
The Jason Segel? I think I'm the Mindy Kaling.
No.
Act up?
Yeah.
I was thinking of Jason Segel in not an Out of Town movie, but just the spinoff one.
Oh, the Buddies one? With
yeah.
I love you, man.
Yeah, except you're not that guy anymore. A year ago, I would have said you're that guy, and now you're, I don't know.
I'm being broken like a horse.
You're Seth Rogen.
Being broken like a horse.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to catch hell for that one, by the way.
Man, you're a whole different. Paul, cut that out. We can't.
Cut that out, Paul. Cut it out.
Okay.
Cut it out.
I'm not gonna.
Or bleep it.
I'm not gonna.
All right. Till next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.